105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Moss FM is a plant-powered radio. It's made possible thanks to photomicrobial fuel cells known as photo-MFCs, which harness and convert electrons produced by plants doing photosynthesis. It's part of a project that could see moss harnessed as a valuable source of energy. So to find out more, I went along to the Department of Biochemistry and first of all spoke to the Professor of Plant Biochemistry, Chris Howe.
My lab is particularly interested in the molecular biology of photosynthesis and also how photosynthesis has evolved over billions of years. So we've actually got a range of projects from exploitation of photosynthesis for renewable energy production, which we'll hear a bit more about, all the way through to looking at some unexpected things like the parasite that causes malaria, because in fact the malaria parasite in evolutionary terms, comes from a photosynthetic lineage, and that relatively recent discovery gives us all sorts of exciting ways of tackling that disease.
It's quite interesting to me because I think my brother-in-law is doctors are currently questioning as to whether or not he has picked up malaria. So for people like him, does this mean that some sort of, I don't know, improving the medication before one goes to affected areas, or perhaps doing something to remove it once people are back, or worse still, living in a country which has malaria as a regular instance?
Well, actually, curiously, both of those are already happening, because if you go to a region with malaria, one of the things they may give you is doxycycline. And we now understand that doxycycline actually works by interfering with this little remnant chloroplast, which is the kind of Achilles heel in this case of the organism and the clue to its ancestry. So actually that prophylaxis already, although people didn't realise it when they started to use it, exploits that evolutionary history. And there's at least one other drug that's currently being used which also is targeting the biochemistry of that little remnant chloroplast.
Oh, that's interesting. So very often, by the sounds of things, you're doing a little bit of detective work, really, aren't you? Trying to find the weak spot of the organism in order to work with that, and in the case of something like malaria, to combat it.
I think for me, the interest is in understanding how these things work and how these things have evolved. So there's the fundamental motivation is an intellectual curiosity, but on the other hand, if actually you can exploit that for something worthwhile, then so much the better.
So how many of you are working in the department? We're here on Tennis Court Road, and I gather you've got a couple of sites.
Yeah, so the biochemistry department itself is a very big department, and we have a couple of dozen members of staff and various fellows, and then a large number of postdoctoral scientists and PhD students working in the labs of those members of staff. So a few hundred people, I would guess, in all. It's the biggest biological department in the university in Cambridge.
And what's the actual history of the department? How long have you been in existence for?
We're, I think, the second oldest biochemistry department in the country. We're actually just coming up to our centenary, and we were founded really by a man called Gowland Hopkins, who won the Nobel Prize and did a huge amount of research on vitamins and really was one of the pioneers of work on the biochemistry of vitamins.
OK, thank you very much.
OK, pleasure.
That's Professor of Plant Biochemistry Chris Howe. Now, the man working on the Moss FM project is biochemist Dr. Paolo Bombelli, who showed me round.
So, Pablo, we have in front of us then 10 little pots of moss, all with a couple of wires attached to them. What's actually taking place here?
Oh, actually, it's correct. There are 10 independent units. In each one, there are two electrodes. One is the anode and one is the cathode. The anode is actually the negative one, is the place where the electrons are coming out, and the cathode is the place where the electrons end up the journey. So all these pots are connected in series together, and each one is generating something in the region of 400-500 millivolts. Actually, do you want to check the potential for each one?
We might as well. Let's have a look. What do we have to do? Connect up some sort of meter or other to that?
This is a little meter. Is a range on potential. Now let's touch the cathode. Let's touch the anode.
Oh, and up it goes. Look at that.
343. If we want to check the other one, we go 460. As I said, they are all different. This one of the beauty of the system, because it's proven that it's based on biological system, in the same way that you might run faster than me or the other way around, also this photosynthetic material might run or produce current faster or slower.
And I guess, is there sort of an average which when you add them all up together?
More than average, because they are connected in series. They add up together. So the final result is the combination.
Ah.
Let me show you the combination. So, as I said, they are all connected together. So if this is what I just said is correct, between the overall cathode and the anode.
And up it goes again.
3.60 volt. So as average, each one is giving around 400 millivolts. So let's see if these 3.6 volts are able to power a digital clock.
Okay, we've got a small digital clock. It's just one you pick up your average electronic shop, I guess.
Yeah, that's correct. I think someone is calling it a small power station. In a sense, it's telling us temperature, humidity and time.
A couple of wires there, which are just being connected up to the two ends. And there we go, they're clipped in place, and as if by magic, up it pops.
Yeah, that's correct. So it's telling us that in this room there are 25 degrees, 37% humidity, and well, the clock...
It's claiming it's 12 o'clock, but hey, you know, it's kind of everything.
So shall we try the radio?
Yep, let's have a look. And this looks to be a very sort of basic radio device of, I guess, either yourself or one of your colleagues has built this little one.
That's correct. He's the person. This system has been created by Fabienne Felder, a Swiss designer, and she was also in charge to create this radio system. So, as I was explaining to you before, in order to power a radio, we need to stabilize current and potential. Therefore, we're having a small battery connected to the system. The battery was charged for over a day. So in that respect, I need to admit that we cannot power the radio all the time. We need to charge up and then power the radio for some time.
So again, on go the connectors. And we have music.
Can you find...
This could be an attempt to find Cambridge 105 here on MOS powered.
On Cambridge 105.
Yes, indeed. We're an hour and a half into a special two-hour edition of Too Good to Be Forgotten here on Cambridge 105. Neil Whiteside here with you, keeping you company, delving back through all the stuff. We already had the 50s, the 70s and the 80s, so I thought we'd kind of come up to speed a little bit.
That's brilliant. Neil Whiteside never sound the same again after that.
Well, we'll be lucky that we find the right spot immediately.
That is very good. How long will this keep powering that radio for off that element?
I suspect no more than 4 or 5 minutes.
So not a long listen, then?
No long listen. We are definitely planning to have a larger system. There are a couple of projects in the pipeline that hopefully we're going to be able to advertise soon, where a larger system will be able to power radio for longer.
So what are the long-term prospects for all of this? The instant comparison, I suppose, is with solar panels, but I don't know, how do the two compare?
I need to admit that so far solar panels are far more effective than our system. On the other hand, the solar panel requires a certain amount of energy to be created, and they might generate also byproducts that need to be discarded in somehow. What we got so far here is a biological solar panel. The biological system harnessing the energy of the light build up itself and fix itself and recreate itself. There is no byproduct. The only thing we need to provide is the light for powering and water to keep this system alive. So we think that although we might not be able to compete directly on the power output, there are other factors that give us advantages.
So the sustainability, putting the product together in the first place, is and the, I guess, the self-sustaining element of it as well.
Absolutely correct. This is why we try also to promote the idea that we are able to farm electricity. We like the idea that we are not producing electricity, we farm electricity. We have done some experiment having other plants working the system like rice. The idea is you produce your rice as well as you produce some electrical current. So you don't compromise the production of food, whereas you got some electrical energy. This could be very, very important in places where they are, in this moment, off-grid. If we think about large area in India, so where the energy consumption is not very high, of course you cannot compromise the production of rice, but you can have both.
So this is something then which wouldn't necessarily be, say, look around Cambridge and you see quite a few solar panels on the roofs of houses these days. Wouldn't necessarily see moss panels here, but if one was to take a trip to India and, I don't know, however long, we might just see some sort of installation with moss on the roof.
This is because so far we are a society, as a Western society, where the power consumption is very high. So in this respect, this technology in this moment is not really matching our power consumption. This is why we are working, and we're working to try to deliver, to make this system delivering more power. But in the meantime, this system is almost matching the power required in society like in India. So we think that over there could be a place where this technology could enter in the real world, but then perhaps with a bit of luck and a lot of hard work, we can make also this technology working for us.
And how long do you think before industry really gets interested in making some sort of commercial product from what you're working on here?
So far, the energy output of this technology, I don't want to try to confuse you with numbers, but something in the region of 100 milliwatt square meter. I think we need to increase this number, improve it, at least 10 or 50 times. If we can do it, then I believe there some proper commercial interest might be generated. This could be done perhaps in 5-10 years. This is the actual target for something with this kind of power output based in the lab. Then, of course, in order to be translated in a real world, it might take a bit longer, but at that point is also an engineering challenge, not just a scientific challenge.
That's Paolo Bombelli from the University Department of Biochemistry here in Cambridge. Went to see him on Monday afternoon. I have to tell you, that little sequence that you heard where we tuned along the radio and got Neil Whiteside on Cambridge 105 was absolutely genuine. We hit upon, like, I did shorten it at the end. He didn't want to hear sort of the whole couple of minutes that I got, but that moment when we tuned in and got the station straight away. I just couldn't believe that whatsoever.